Welcome to the Dog Liaison Podcast. I'm your host, Jenna. On this podcast, we focus on giving guardians of anxious dogs a home. If your dog has reactivity, aggression, separation anxiety, or generalized anxiety, then this podcast is what you have been looking for. We are going to go deep into understanding your dog's anxiety-related disorders. And we're also going deep into what it is like to be the guardian of an anxious dog, so that you have a sanctuary and a guide to help you to be able to sustain your dog's recovery. I'm a professional dog trainer. At this point, I work exclusively with dogs facing anxiety-related disorders. And I really understand on a deep level how to support you and your anxious dog. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us. We're talking about something y'all went popped off in my DMs over the weekend when I was talking about this. So I would like to just kind of get the opportunity to deep dive and really talk about making data-driven decisions for your dog and your dog's recovery and the importance of actually logging. I think that we talk so passionately about how we want science-backed training. We want science-backed methods. We want methods that are data, you know, motivated. And yet so many of us don't really know even how to implement that science with our own dogs. We don't actually know how to make data-driven decisions, how to log, how to reflect that log, how to interpret that log. And so that's kind of one of the things I really want to deep dive on today. I think I didn't realize when I was earlier in my career how important it was for the guardians to be doing this science, for the guardians to be the ones that are logging and making the data-driven decisions. So I'm very excited to talk about that and really expand on this conversation so that it's implementable for you, not just for your trainer, whomever you hire. Okay. So let me back up a little bit. I want to talk about how this conversation came about. So over the weekend, I posted one of the wins that we get in the RRP, one of the dogs named Pina. She was reacting to about 11% and this past week she reacted only 5%. And so what that means is that we were able to actually quantify the frequency of her reaction. So of all of the triggers that she would come into contact with over the last, you know, month, she would on average at that point be hitting about 11% of them. She would go over threshold. This past week, she was able to train through all of them and she only went over threshold about 5% of the time. So there's a very hard quantifiable percentage there. We've also been able to see that V, who's also in the RRP, she used to go on walks and go over threshold 5, 10, 15 times in one walk. And there was a month period. I don't know exactly where they're at this point. But I know in the month of November, there was a month period where they only had two reactions on walks and for the entire month. And they had gone a whole 2 weeks without any reactions. And mind you, that's a very hard, concrete thing that most people can estimate. But in V's case and Team V, they were really able to be like factual about it. Like, no, 2 months in the last 30 days, period, full stop. We have Angus, who Team Angus wasn't exactly sure how much progress they were making with their dog's reactivity. They were seeing some progress, which was keeping them going, but they weren't really able to identify exactly what the progress was. It was more just feeling. And so I sent them on their mission and I said, go look at your data. Let's go see what your data says. So they pulled up their threshold statements, which we'll get to in a second. They pulled up their threshold statements from when they first joined the RRP and compared it to where they were presently. And they could see that they had increased the distance. And so I don't remember exactly what it was. I think they had gotten 12 meters closer to where their threshold statement was a month prior. So they had been able to increase distance, get closer by 12 meters in 30 days. That is hard fact. It's not like, oh yeah, we got closer. It's not like, oh, we got about 10 feet. Oh, it's about, you know, this. It was like 12 meters is our new threshold statement. So there's a very hard, clear progress there. And I think that having that very factual
specific approach actually makes our minds feel better because it feels more real. It feels more concrete. Being able to say precisely 12 meters, being able to say 2 times in the last 30 days, being able to say we've dropped down 6% from 11% reactivity to 5% reactivity, being able to quantify that and make it hard fact helps our mindset because it's not like, oh, it kind of feels good, or it kind of feels like we've improved, kind of like not. It's concrete. And the only way you can get these, the only way you can get that hardcore factual improvement progress is if you're actually logging, is if you're actually recording what needs to be recorded, and then you're reflecting that data. So one of the reasons we log is to make data-driven decisions. Literally just this morning, I had a Rover team shoot me an email and be like, Jenna, I think I'm going to leave Rover alone for, I think I'm going to push her a little bit further in duration for separation anxiety than where they were. They're like, I have this video. She seems a little stressed, but I think I can push her further and she'll settle down. And my response to that was, okay, I hear what you're saying. Can you back up what you're saying with data? Is you're saying you think you want to increase the duration. You want to push her a little bit further because then she might lay down. Where in her data is that reflected? Can you prove to me that this is a good idea for Deja, not just we heard someone else did it and it worked out for them? And I challenged that team to go back to their data and prove to me that this would be a good data-driven decision. And their response was, ooh, actually, I think I need a couple more experiments before I'm willing to take that risk of increasing the duration on her. I need more information before I can make that decision. I was going off of what felt right. I think I could leave her longer, but when I was actually looking at the facts, I actually don't have enough information to make that decision. That decision would be unsafe. And that's not to say that the decision wouldn't result in something okay. Like sometimes we can make an intuition-based approximation. Sometimes we make an experiment based off of approximation. We think something based off of what we feel, right? And it ends up okay. Everything is hunky-dory at the end. Our dog is fine. Our dog doesn't go over a threshold. We celebrate. And there's nothing wrong with that. But that's only going to get you so far, my friends. It's only going to get you so far. And at some point, when you have a highly anxious dog, you got to be, if you want to do science-backed training, my friends, you got to do some science. Like let's do some science. Let's get nerdy with it. So that's why we log. Now let's talk about what to log. Okay. I'm going to break down what to log and how to reflect that log. Okay. What to log? First and foremost, threshold statements, statements, plural. Now, for those who may have not heard that phrase, threshold statements are something that is unique to the RRP. That is a phrase that you're going to hear us say. You're going to hear threshold everywhere else. But what I've actually asked all of my clients to do is to convert a threshold into a process that can be summarized into one clear statement. And then I've asked them to memorize those statements whenever they're working on a criteria. Now, statements plural, because it's not like you do one little experiment for one little criteria and you're like, I know my threshold. I did it. I figured it out. No. We got many, 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 many threshold statements that we need to dive deep into. So you need to know your starting point, and there needs to be a very clear outline of what that starting point looks like, not just like he barks 50 feet away. That's not clear enough. We need to see exactly. It should play out like a story. It should play out like a story where I can see exactly what's happening and at what stage. So if you're reading your statement and you're like, my dog barks when he sees a person, is that a story? I sort of have a vague idea, but like, what does the person look like? Where is your dog? What is your dog doing exactly? Barking is just one piece of the entire body. And even if you're just talking about the barking, what does that barking sound like? Is it high-pitched? Is it repetitious? Is it bark, bark, bark? Or is it bark, pause, bark? So we're talking about like Sam. So if you only want to talk about the bark, that's fine. But like, let's break that down even more because bark is vague in and of itself, right? So we start off with very clear threshold statements. Then we start actually logging our training sessions. Now, when you're logging your training sessions, it's very important that you are logging all of the criteria, not just it was a person, it was a dog. That's not criteria, my friends. That's a trigger. There's a big difference. Now in the RP, I give our clients a formula. It's called the ADAD formula. And this helps them break down exactly what criteria needs to be included on their log. But I'm going to give you a dabble into that formula for you. Okay. I'm going to like tiptoe in there just to give you some nuggets of gold. Okay. First and foremost, we need to know the duration, the distance. We need to know the duration and the distance of the trigger. We need to know what's in the environment of the trigger. We need to know the frequency of the trigger. Because, you know, the trigger that occurred fourth might give us different data than the trigger that occurred first. So being able to really identify when this trigger occurred on the walk, when this trigger occurred in order of the triggers, being able to identify that is going to help you when you're actually tracking, because that's another way of reflecting your data, which we'll get to in a second, right? But that's another thing that you're going to reflect on later. So you're writing down all the criteria of the trigger. You're also writing down all of your dog's behaviors. You're going to study your dog's behaviors. I don't just mean like, oh, she looked at me, or oh, she scratched her ear and then stop. That doesn't really tell us much. Like, I need to see it play out. And at what point did those behaviors display? I need to be able to see at what point did those behaviors occur compared to when the trigger occurred, or compared to what the criteria of the environment was asking for. There's a comparison there. Again, we're looking for a story. If your log is not playing out like a story, it's probably not that reliable. And there's probably room for improvement, okay? So we're also going to start logging your dog's enrichment. Enrichment being everything, but everything that occurred outside of the trigger, right? So, and I don't just mean like, if you're working on reactivity on walks, I don't just mean what is the enrichment on the walk. I mean, what is the enrichment for the entire day? Because your dog's enrichment is going to have a direct correlation to what happens everywhere else. So for example, we have another dog in the RP who noticed that their dog's behavior is going to change based off of their sleep patterns, based off of the dog's sleep patterns. So if the dog slept at like an afternoon or had a nap, their behavior outcome is going to look different than if the dog didn't get that nap, or if that nap wasn't as long or whatever, right? So being able to compare what your dog's enrichment is, cross compare that with what the triggers are and what events occur in your training session. These are all things you need to be logging. Again, in the RP, we give a formula for enrichment. It's called the dog breed self method, or the DBS method, you might hear us say. So one of the ways that I help my clients is I've created formulas and I've created structure and logs that are all pre-formulated and everything. So all they have to do is type in the information and the conversion occurs. That's one of the ways that we've helped our clients streamline this process. There's a lot less guessing. It makes it as factual and objective as possible. Because, and this leads me into my next point, when you're logging, your goal is actually to take something that is highly, highly, highly subjective, like your dog's learning opportunity. Your goal is to take something that's highly subjective and make it as objective and factual and observable as you possibly can, right? That's what we're really going off of. We're trying to move as far away from intuition and gut and as far into what the data has proven as much as we possibly can. Now, when we're talking about animals, guys, and I don't just mean like dogs, I also mean like humans and, you know, birds and all of the animals in the universe. When we're talking about animals and animal behavior, it's always going to be subjective, right? Like you can put measurable processes in place to objectify something, but at the end of the day, there's always a level of subjectivity. So one of the ways that we continue to objectify our log is by going back and looking for trends. And this kind of goes into my next part, which is reflecting your data. So once you've logged your data, that's only like 35% of the work, maybe 40, but the other 60, 70% is actually reflecting that data and getting and pulling out even more information than you noticed when you first started. Because when you have a collection of data, now the fun begins. In all honesty, if I can be nerdy for you for a moment, this is my favorite part. My clients will tell you it's the hardest part. The Rover teams will tell you that reflecting the data is the time that they just want to like come at me with a pitchfork and be like, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing this to us? But reflecting the data is actually the most enlightening part. It's where all the aha moments actually come, believe it or not, right? When you have a method to work off of when you're reflecting the data and you're going through that process, it feels difficult, but the more you do it, the more exciting it becomes, the more happy you get to do it because you know that you're going to find out something about your dog. You're going to find a trend. You're going to find a sequence of events to avoid or to push further into. You're going to find more information out by collecting all that data and then really sitting with it and observing it and analyzing it. And this is where the magic happens.
This episode is brought to you by my signature coaching program, the Recovering Rover Program for Anxious Dogs. One dog, 1 million phobias. Reactivity, noise sensitivity, separation anxiety, generalized anxiety, and the list goes on and on. If your dog has multiple anxiety-related disorders, then you know the awful stress of feeling trapped in your own home. Having a dog with anxiety does not mean sacrificing your own mental health. The RRP is the most comprehensive program that coaches guardians on how to treat their dog's anxiety. This is a 6-month group coaching program dedicated to making you an expert in desensitizing your dog's triggers and making your dog feel more calm and comfortable in the world. For all the info on the Recovering Rover program and to see whether you and your dog are a good fit, go to getacalmdog.com/RRP to learn more. And now back to the episode.
So how do you reflect that data? What are you actually doing? Well, for starters, I really think it's easy to start off with the most broad perspectives and then get more and more specific and more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like more narrow as you go. So what I mean by this is like, when I'm talking about how broad you go, what I mean by this is using charts and using factors that kind of narrow it down into three. So for example, we have one chart called the Fair, Good, Great chart. And this is just a really quick visual on how many we had training sessions we had that were fair, how many training sessions we had that went good, and how many training sessions that went great, right? It's a very quick visual. So we're starting off super broad. Are we going to be able to extract a crap ton of information from that chart? Probably not, right? But it gives us that orientation. It tells us where we're starting off of. So we start off with a real broad lens. Then we get more and more narrow. And the more narrow you go, the more specific it is to your dog, but also the more narrow you go, the harder it's going to be. So you just have to know that going in, that the more detail specific you're trying to be, the more challenging it's going to be for you as well. So when you're talking about starting off broad and then getting narrow, one of the things that you want to do as you get narrow is start to look through a certain lens. So for example, if you have a hypothesis that your dog does better in the morning than in the afternoon, and you're like, you know, I just feel it. I just feel that that is true. Okay. So what I would do is I would go through and I would look at all of the training sessions that happened in the morning, get a consensus of what those look like, and then compare those against all of the training sessions that happened in the afternoon. And are we accurate about that? Are our morning training sessions more successful than the evening? The follow-up to that is, what are we using as a barometer of successful? Are we starting off with over threshold or under threshold? Because that would be a very broad lens. How many times did Rover go over threshold? How many times did Rover go under threshold or train under? That's a very broad lens. That could be one range of successful. A second barometer of successful could be, you're looking for, did they display a specific behavior? So you might be thinking, every time Rover, I'm just pulling a behavior out of thin air. Every time Rover shakes off, that tells us that Rover was highly anxious a second ago and now he's calmed himself. That's just out of thin air. Okay, don't hold me to water there. I'm not saying that's always the case. But you might be looking for, how many times did your dog actually shake off, right? You might notice that at the beginning of the month, your dog did a shake off every 2 triggers. And now your dog is only doing a shake off every 7 triggers, right? That's a barometer of success. It's very specific. It's very unique to your dog. And no one else in the universe is going to be able to figure that out. No one else is going to be able to figure out that you're able to go every 7 triggers without a shake off, unless you have the data and you're reflecting that data. It's just far too concrete, far too specific. And this is one of the reasons why I'm such a firm believer in converting our guardians into experts in their own dogs versus us trainers just kind of stepping in the middle. Because there's no way, no trainer in the universe is ever going to be able to tell you that your dog has graduated from being able to do a shake-off every two triggers to every 7 triggers. No trainer is going to be able to do that. Why? Because your trainer is not with you 24/7. Your trainer, I guarantee you, is not doing this detailed of logging for every dog they work with. Guarantee you. I'm sorry to call all the trainers out, including myself, but we don't have time to do this detailed of a log for the 50 plus clients we have on our roster. There's a reason I only do 50 clients per year, and it's because even that is overwhelming. So we have to really train our guardians to get super specific with it so that they can become the experts, so that they can have the discoveries of, oh, we've pushed how often Rover does a shake-off. So we start off, just to recap, by reflecting our data through a very broad lens. Rover went over threshold, Rover stayed under. That's super broad. Rover has had 75% great training sessions and 20% fair training sessions. Super broad. Not a lot of information can be extracted from that, but still some. Then we get more and more narrow. And our goal is to become so specific. We're looking for such detailed data that no human in the universe would ever be able to tell it to you. No dog trainer is ever going to be able to tell you the information that your data has. And then we're able to make all of our future decisions for our training opportunities, what criteria we want to focus on, what triggers we want to focus on, where we want to train, how we want to train, what behaviors we're looking for. We're able to make all of those decisions that come into play based off of what has been logged and is observable and is true for our dog, not what is true for every other dog that, you know, claims to have anxiety. What is true for your dog? Those answers, my friends, are found in your data. Those answers are found in your data. And I know that this is not something that we want to hear. We want to hear that our dog trainers, our dog whisperers have all the answers. And if I just go to them and ask them and consult them, they're going to tell me. I just know it because they love me and I'm paying them to. But that's not actually helpful. And at the end of the day, you're actually getting less information from a trainer than if you just turned around and reflected the data. You would actually get less factual, less concrete information if you went to a trainer and asked them than if you just went to your data and asked and consulted your data to give you the answer. So one of the things that my clients will always tell you is if they show me a video and they're like, Jen, I'd really like your input on this video. It's not uncommon for me to respond with, wow, you're right. That was a really interesting behavior. That was fascinating information that she just gave us. I have no idea what it means. And at first, especially if you're new to the RP, you're gonna be like, come on now. But part of it is the fun in me telling you, I don't know what that means. We're gonna have to pause here, put this on hold, record it, and record it every single time it occurs, and then look for the commonality, and then look for what the trend is here, right? Like I said, it's unethical for a trainer to just look at a behavior and go, I think your dog is calm. I think your dog is curious. I think your dog is over threshold. This is the importance of knowing your data, logging your data, and having tools that are going to streamline that information for you so that you're not spending 3 hours every night logging everything. We all want to talk about how science is important, but no one's ever like, let's actually do some science and investigations and hypotheses and data and logs and charts and statistics. No one ever actually wants to talk about that stuff because that's not the pretty stuff. Okay, my friends, I'm glad this was supportive for you, and we will chat very soon. Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dog Liaison Podcast. Support for this episode came from the Recovering Rover Program. Go to getacalmdog.com to learn how you can treat your dog's anxiety. And you can support this podcast by leaving a review and sharing. I appreciate your continued support, and I'll see you in the next episode.